And welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Hi.
How goes it, Jeff?
From a Lucha perspective, it's fine.
Okay. I think it's better than fine. As we talked about last week, the Netflix deal, the return date.
Yeah, we got some good news here.
Yeah, exactly. So the news was good.
Yeah, future's so bright, I'm wearing Mundo shades.
That's a good song, too. But welcome back to Lucha Lowdown. Lucha Underground, of course, is still on their mid-season break from Season 3. They will be back at the end of May. So we're continuing along with the greatest hits episodes that they've been giving us, two every week for us to take our trip down Lucha Memory Lane. This week we got All Night Long and Penultima Lucha from Season 1. Starting with All Night Long, I thought it was great promo packages to set up everything that was going down, like between Mundo and Puma and Alberto El Patron. And but I mean, it's All Night Long. It is the Lucha Underground equivalent of the Iron Man match. And it was, I remember watching it live and being very impressed. And it was the same feeling. Just overall thoughts on this episode and the match, Jeff.
Well, I always have great respect whenever wrestlers are in an Iron Man match, or in this case, an All Night Long match. They have great conditioning. Mundo and Puma are two of the top talents in Lucha Underground to begin with. Basically what you were just talking about with the promos and, you know, the storytelling, when you look back at Season 1, you know, both of them are such main characters in the story, especially everything that's revolving around the title. So I felt like this was like a good conclusion, I guess, to their feud.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and then, I mean, we'll talk about it too. You really start to see Mundo's character emerge as far as what he's transforming into. I mean, based on what Stryker and Vampiro are saying, Mundo's actions, and then just some of the other stuff that goes on.
I think you see Puma's character transform as well. And we were talking about in the last episode just what a great champion Prince Puma was in Lucha Underground. And this is maybe the best example of it. This might be his greatest successful title defense. And it was a great match. It was a great feud with Mundo and one of the early great feuds, even when they were both babyfaces. And here now, yeah. Mundo, of course, has gone heel. But my very first note that I've written down here from rewatching, I just wrote down, Prince Puma is the best wrestler in Lucha Underground. Just from a presentation aspect, as far as technically in the ring, the moves he can do and how he moves in the ring, God, he is great. Like, I mean, the kid, he can do things that I've never seen before, and he's just so much fun to watch. So I really appreciate going back and looking at this title reign, and again, how we talked about what a fighting champion he was in Lucha Underground. This is the zenith for him here. I believe this is his had one more defense after this, or two more defenses after this, but this to me was the peak, the All Night Long match with Johnny Mundo. A couple quick falls right off the bat. Prince Puma was showing off his athleticism, caught Mundo with a quick roll up to go up 1-0. And then Mundo was going for the end of the world, and Puma countered it, but then Mundo with a great counter into a heel hold the rope pin, and referee Marty Elias could not see, so it got tied up 1-1. And then things spilled to the outside, and Mundo did, I believe, a Falcon Arrow through this like crate that got the holy shit chant started. But I thought the Mundo using the crowbar on Puma's head, and again, Puma sells in such a way because of how he has such body control that moves like that, just how he sells to me is so great. So that crowbar shot, I really bought that hook, line, and sinker. And then I thought the psychology was good because so Mundo crushes him with that crowbar and then rolls him in to go up 2-1. What are you thinking so far in the match, Jeff?
Well, what I liked was basically when Mundo starts taking advantage and doing the series of pinfalls, which I think is what just about to happen.
Yes, I agree. So yeah, so then Mundo goes up 2-1 off the crowbar shot, and Stryker and Vampiro on commentary saying, cover him again. Moonlight drive to go up 3-1, end of the world to go up 4-1. So yeah, you get this series of pinfalls going down. So what did you like about that?
Well, what I like about that is it's definitely one of those like insurmountable, you know, challenges. There's no way that Puma can come back from that. This is the kind of champion that he's been the entire season. This has basically been Prince Puma's story. You know, he's just this this plucky kid from Boyle Heights. You know, his great talent and his heart is what's basically brought him to this level. Nothing can keep him down. But it, when it gets to this point, it's like, how can someone who's just immortal basically still come back and remain champion? Which, I mean, that's how the story goes. What I also liked was the violence was getting so extreme. I don't know if you remember this. Vampiro started to condemn it, which I don't know if I've ever heard that before. He quickly changed his tune and goes, you know what? I'm getting into it. But for a little while, he's like, oh, no, man, this is too much. And he was saying that Prince Puma should quit. He was saying, yeah, no, your career is what matters. And he was saying that Mundo was being too harsh. It was ridiculous to a certain extent.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was sort of the whole, like, mercy rule thing that was going on as he went up 4-1, and then he just kept pounding on Puma. I mean, that reverse neck breaker to the apron and everything.
Well, I mean, at that point, if I was Mundo, I would have just ran the hell out of there.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that because, so, they were battling outside, too. I mean, Puma wasn't really battling at this point. He was pretty much just getting just the crap kicked out of him by Mundo. I mean, it was a really dominating performance up to this point by Mundo. He started setting up the tables. And
yes,
he didn't put Puma through them yet, though. And it was at this point, I think Puma
Lucha is so good at the slow burn.
Yes.
When it comes to that, the either chair stacking or table stacking. I know I think it was during the Royal Rumble. They had a similar setup in one of their matches. But Lucha does that consistently where you don't feel that you're being teased. And it really is just part of the match. And it's almost natural that they don't use it right away.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I really like it because I feel it's a difficult thing to pull off, and they've done it more than once with different talent.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think the payoff in this one was just absolutely awesome. Probably my favorite moment of the night. So I really liked, though, because you talked about if you were Mundo, you would have just ran out of there because there's no countouts. So you're right, and he kind of does that at one point. He
does, yeah, which is a typical heel move,
which was great. But I liked him going up to the band and grabbing the mic, and he just starts off with a very condescending hola, and then he just starts saying look at the scoreboard, and he tells the band to start, by the way, like saying scoreboard and everything like that. It's just such a dick, like he's playing it up really well with that. And
this is Mundo coming into his own, man.
Yeah,
this is where he belongs. This is how he should perform. That's my favorite part of the match. This whole sequence is my favorite part of the match.
He has the band start playing a song, and I really appreciated Matt Stryker calling the one of the members of the band M. Bison because of how he was dressed.
Yes.
That was great. But yeah, this sequence here, so they're up there with the band. Puma comes back to life and starts fighting with Mundo up there, and he grabs a El Cabong painted like the Mexican flag and nails Mundo with it.
Dude, I don't know about you, but like when Puma was climbing the ladder and the band was playing, it almost felt like a movie soundtrack. It had like a cinematic feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I almost wish Mundo didn't see that Puma was climbing the ladder. Like he was just showboating for the audience so that Puma could have gotten the drop on him almost.
I agree. Yeah.
Like that would have made it more like a movie to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. That would have been great. But Mundo got like legit busted open by that guitar.
Dude, he also just looked miserable. at a certain point, like I just saw it on his face.
He was not having a good night, and things got continually worse from there, because after that Puma tackles Mundo and they free fall through the whatever three or four tables it was. I don't remember how many, but that is my why I love Lucha moment from this match. I mean, that is one of the best table spots you will see, and you could see it in the crowd reaction, because again, like you said, they are great at the slow burn, so when they pay it off, they get you again. And it got me, and I've seen the match before. So they went through the tables. Puma got the better of the exchange on that, and when he was able to get Mundo in the ring, he did get a pin to make it 4-2, so he cut the lead in half. And this is when Puma started making his comeback. Got, shortly after that, the spinning reverse pile driver to make it 4-3. And then it was at this point, I don't know if you picked up on it or not, but it was like time was winding down, and Matt Stryker just started rapid fire throwing out like the sports analogies, like you got to start going for the three pointers, you got to start throwing the going for the swinging for the fences, you got to throw the Hail Mary, and I'm just like cracking up, man, I was dying over there. I loved that. It was tremendous.
Dude, Stryker's so great and so passionate. I'll go ahead because I wrote this down about Stryker, but it's about to happen. It's after Alberto El Patron gets there,
yeah,
and is pounding Mundo basically right in front of them. And so you have Stryker on film as he's doing the commentary. He's like hunched over, like right behind them, and just like, you know, shouting. And I was just thinking, I was like, dude, he's so into it. He's so passionate. And that's exactly what I want for my commentator. It's the polar opposite of what we experienced at WrestleMania last year when we saw Michael Cole holding the notes.
Oh, yes. Oh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Brutal.
Stryker, it's just any match almost. I mean, this is a special match, but it's still almost any match. And he's got no notes in front of him. He's just doing his commentary. You know, it gives it a more authentic and real look. And if he's excited, I'm even more excited. You know, that's just how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. You can hear genuine, and Matt Stryker is genuine. Is he cheesy? Yes, of course. I'm a cheesy guy though, so I appreciate it.
We are watching professional wrestling where they're talking about magic medallions and witches who are thousands of years old. You've got to enjoy the cheese.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Stryker gets that.
We're all having fun. I think he gets it, and I think the audience gets it. I think we've got a good fan base for this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I want to continue to see it expand, but I think everybody who likes it gets what it is, and we're okay with it.
Definitely.
And if it's not your sort of thing, then, you know, keep walking. There's plenty of pro wrestling or other things that you can watch on TV.
But also don't keep walking.
Is right up our alley. Well, yeah. Somehow watch it where they get the ratings, but then, yeah, you know, you can do whatever you want.
Keep your mouth shut. Yeah, exactly.
Listen to this podcast, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Rate us and review us on iTunes. But, yeah, you mentioned El Patron showed up. And it, again, playing into the whole feud and everything like that, like there was a lot going on in this match, but it didn't feel overbooked or too much. I love seeing El Patron in Lucha Underground. So this was a welcome sight for me. And then I remember this, promo very well. So seeing it again, something about, Alberto, whenever he calls somebody a perro or whatever, it's just, he's great. I think he was so underutilized in some of the other places that he's been. So I hope he returns to Lucha Underground. But the beatdown he put on Mundo led to the tie. It is 4-4. So all those Hail Marys, the three balls, and everything like that Stryker was spouting off about came to fruition. It is a tie ball game here. Patron cut his little promo. And then we got the series of near falls. What stood out to me is probably this might be my favorite move that I don't believe is used as a finisher right now in pro wrestling by anyone. I mean, I'm sure by somebody, but on the mainstream, it really should be. But the standing Spanish fly or the C4 move, which I love that move. And I think that's a sick finisher that more people that somebody should incorporate. Maybe Johnny Mundo, because I think it looks more vicious than the end of the world and everything like that. And Jeff, you may remember it from one of my creative characters from WWE 2K that I gave them that finisher under a different name. But I really liked
yes,
that.
Did.
Yeah, I really like that spot.
That was a character who definitely would have fit in a Worldwide Underground.
Absolutely. He was modeled. Although he was
modeled
after the.
Weird to see him not be top dog though.
He was modeled after the coolest person I know. So, that's the truth. But yeah, so we got the series of near falls, and then what ended? Of course, we know what the result is going to be with the 6:30. Puma gets the pin with time winding down.
Dude, perfect with the timing, also.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, I don't know if everybody appreciates that enough exactly, you know, as far as how they're able to choreograph things and make it look natural as they're moving from one part to the next. But, I mean, that's exactly how you would have wanted it. I mean, it could only be slightly more perfect.
Yeah. I actually appreciated that it didn't go down to, like, there were only 3 seconds left. You know what? Because it just
yeah, it was
that,
like
that
four or five where you're sitting there. I think. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's as good as you can hope for, really.
Yeah, and it would have felt more contrived. I feel like if it came down to the final three, you know, that's just me. But that was the end of All Night Long. Just overall, what did you think?
Well, I have just one question first, though. What if it had ended in a tie? Because I don't know if they went over that in the beginning. Would the title remain with Puma, which would make sense? Or would it have been the first person to get to that amount of pinfalls, which would have been Mundo? Would they have won? Like, I don't know. What were the rules for that if it was? Or would there have been a sudden death?
All Stryker said was that El Jefe will not let this end in a tie. I'm sure of that. And so I think if it had, it would have been like a sudden death overtime thing. and it would of course still been anything goes. I think Dario would have taken care of that if they needed to. So that's.
But yeah, my overall impressions of the match, I mean, of course it was great. It was my two favorite performers in the temple. Each of them, this is one of their better matches. It really was just a perfect example of how great season one was, because you had great matches. You had an amazing champion who hasn't been surpassed yet in Lucha Underground. Not only was he the greatest fighting champion, I think he had some of the best feuds and some of the best matches. This one against Mundo is definitely in the topper echelon.
But without I mean, there was even having to say a word too.
Yeah, that's the great thing. You know, it's like, I mean, I like Puma speaking more, and I think it's just better for him in general, and that's just kind of the wrestling that I'm used to. But I also appreciate a character who can really tell his story so much in the ring, and even with the vignettes as far as characters talking around him. And I think part of that goes with what you were saying as far as his body control and his athleticism. When you're someone as talented as that, you really can emote without having to use words, and also, I mean, obviously without using facial expressions. So, I mean, it's all really impressive.
I mean, up to this point, he was the main character of GTA 3. Like, just nothing. And so
he's like Link from Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
Because those cartoons aren't canon.
I loved going back and watching this. This is one of the best matches in Lucha Underground history. And it was cool because it's going to get us ready for one Lucha Underground returns, because we are going to get, I believe it's just the second one in the history of Lucha Underground, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I'm almost positive, because, I mean, it's not like them to dedicate an entire episode to too many matches. You know, they only do that so often.
So we're going to get the second all-night-long match when Lucha Underground comes back from their mid-season break, with the Mac taking on Johnny Mundo, who is now champion. So Mundo has got the experience in the match, although he came up short. But I feel like I love the build that they've done so far for the second all-night-long match, as far as just Mundo being such a dick, saying that Mac's not even conditioned right for that kind of match. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So it was cool going back to watch this to get ready for that, and just what a classic Lucha Underground match this was. Before we get into the next episode of the Greatest Hits for this week, let's take care of a little Lucha business, and that is to say thank you to all you believers for downloading, listening to the podcast, talking about the podcast. We appreciate all of you that have done so. If you've come across us, somehow on somebody else's Facebook or Twitter page or anything like that, if you enjoy us, please rate us and review us on iTunes. It is the best thing you can do to help the podcast, so it boosts our listenership on iTunes, so more people can see us and hear about us. Word of mouth, pro wrestling fans, we are a tight-knit community, so I really appreciate all you spreading the word about Lucha Lowdown. So please continue to do that at Lucha Lowdown on Twitter if you want to get involved in the conversation with us. I live tweet a lot of the episodes when I'm not doing my other job at the Golden State Warriors. So I enjoy doing that. I love interacting with y'all on Twitter. So please follow us at Lucha Lowdown. You can find us on Facebook. If you want to email us personally, which some of you have, luchalowdown@gmail.com. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, again, love talking with all you believers. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Audio Boom. And with that, back to the rest of the show. Penultima Lucha was the second episode of the Greatest Hits this week. I loved this episode. I just thought this was a lot of fun. This is a great Dario episode. And that's just overall thoughts on Penultima Lucha.
You're a fan of the Aztec Medallions. I'm a fan of the Aztec Medallions. This is where we finally find out what the Medallions can do. I mean, and I think we have a great way to determine the holder of the final medallion, even though I think he was the holder of the first medallion as well. I forget exactly if Phoenix had earned his first or not. But I love that match. You're absolutely right about this being a great Dario episode, because he has a couple of really key points, which I enjoy a lot, starting with this first vignette.
Yeah, the first vignette, and I just have written down here, Dario Cueto pulling a Wayne's World 2.
So many eye puns. It's so uncomfortable.
He's talking to Big Rick, talking about how we haven't been seeing eye to eye lately. And Big Rick has to be given credit for being a great straight man here. And just his reaction, or lack thereof, as it were, just being like, eye to eye. And It's like bad choice of words. Talking about it's like you've been blinded by Daivari's money. It's like blind. It's like again, I thought that was great, great stuff. What did you think of the opening vignette?
I love the opening vignette. What I find funny is that Dario and Big Rick, who have not been seeing eye to eye, in fact, they've kind of been oppositional towards each other for a large chunk of the season. He just gives Big Rick a medallion. And then later, you see Dario be such a prick to Phoenix. And I know Phoenix is a face and, you know, Dario's a heel. What did those two ever have to do with each other? Why are you being such a prick to Phoenix, man?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
if anybody's pissed at Phoenix, it's Mil Muertes. And that's fine. I get it.
Yeah, well,
but Dario's just a jerk for jerk's sake.
Well, he's a heel and Phoenix is a face, and you know, it's
that
just
really is it.
That's all there is to it sometimes. I love the vignette, it was great, but I gotta tell you, my next note here is OMG Melissa. She was destroying in this episode. She was house of fire. Woo!
She looked like she was wearing a sports bra first. It's like, what's that top, man?
She looked terrific.
No, in a good way. I was like, damn. No, Melissa is she's just great.
Yeah, she is. She looked terrific. So I just felt like we had to make note of that. But we started the action with Tejano taking on Johnny Mundo. And this was another one. I liked the promo package in the beginning of the episode to set this up and everything like that. You know, I was even thinking, like, yeah, where's Blue Demon Jr. been, you know, and all that. So, and we got Tejano versus Mundo here. I enjoyed the match. What did you think?
I like the match, too, because these are two characters that don't really cross paths that often. And I would like to see them in the ring against each other more often, because I think they both have good skill sets that go well against each other. The one part that really stood out to me was that kick that almost took Mundo's head off.
Yeah.
In the center. I mean, that was so perfect as far as the sound and placement. It was unreal.
I liked getting the Tejano and El Patron lore throughout the match. I felt like this was the Tejano character was still relatively fresh to me, I think, at this point, and just getting to know him.
Well, he'd
was
only
cool.
done so much and was really El Patron's adversary, you know, and that's kind of all you had to know about him at that point.
Yeah, and I liked getting that backstory from him and everything like that. There were some intense moves, like the ring apron neck breaker from Mundo to Tejano, but Tejano, his monkey flip to Johnny Mundo is what made me underline an exclamation point. That was freaking vicious. It got a what I call "this sucks" finish, in the words of Matt Stryker, with the crew coming in.
Dude, and they came in like such tools too.
They did. Well, that's their job. They are tools.
No, they're doing their job. But man, yeah, it's so easy to hate them.
This sucks. but yeah, so the crew came in that gave Tejano the victory because they had to disqualify Johnny Mundo. But I enjoyed this because Tejano started trying to clear the ring. Well, you know, Mundo joining in on the beatdown, by the way. But El Patron showed up, and then they cleared the ring together. I don't know. I just thought that was a cool moment between two rivals that ended up, you know, working together there for a quick second. I thought that was great.
I wrote that down, too. I like their temporary truce. I like the idea that that doesn't make the two of them friends or anything.
Yeah.
But right now, they each have, you know, bigger enemies to face.
Yeah, definitely.
And so they'll do that. Yeah.
We then got another segment with El Jefe Dario Cueto. He was with Hernandez. And Dario had the line that stood out to me here. He's talking about how he's been listening to some of the fans on Twitter and how they're not a fan of Hernandez. And I was like, man, this underground fighting ring has a big presence on Twitter. That's probably not a good thing if you want to stay
open. Well,
why
do you think so many cops have been infiltrating the temple?
That's, you know, that's a fair
point. It's not
exactly
a well-kept secret. Yeah.
That's a fair point. But this whole segment set up the first ever Believer's Backlash match, which... If I'm wait, you know what? It was Drago won, and that's all that matters.
Dude, I totally forgot about Hernandez and Drago in the first place. That's just a weird one to me.
I didn't forget
matchup.
About it. I was excited
because you know all Drago lore. You're like,
yeah, I do. I'm
your Aerostar.
I get again. Like if I don't know what coin had to flip to if I had only known that Aerostar was going to be such a lore based character. But he's growing in appreciation, obviously. But yeah, so this set up the first ever Believer's Backlash match, and Hernandez's very short stint in Lucha Underground. From there, we got Mac versus Cage, sort of, because it wasn't so much of a match as it was just Mac getting a quick roll-up upset on Cage, and then...
Then proceeding to get the crap kicked out of him for a little bit. I mean, Mac rallied, but...
Yeah, I like Vampiro saying, like, I don't think I'd want to beat Cage if that's what you get afterwards, just a beatdown.
Exactly.
So, but that set up, again, in another great... This is why it's such a great Dario Cueto episode, is that he comes out to make a match that I think is so memorable from the first Ultima Lucha, which is he decides to make a Falls Count Anywhere match with Cage and the Mac, and also the Ultima Lucha is going to be 2 weeks, not just one. What did you think of that? And there was a reference here, Jeff, that I wrote down, but I don't know if you got it. But what did you think about this?
I did not write down a reference, so I probably missed it. The Cage Mac match was one of my favorites, actually, from the original Ultima Lucha. I love the cinder block finish.
Mm-hmm.
And also a couple of big boys like that getting up there in the crowd, which I think is always fun and exciting. And then when they were showing basically, clips from previous episodes before this match, the Mac is the one Cage beat the crap out of in the locker room to prove his worth. Which I had forgotten who it was that he did that to. I'm a little surprised that Big Rick didn't do anything, because apparently he and the Mac are cousins.
Yeah, but
he just kind of stood there and is like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
Well. Mercenary is a mercenary. Didn't cost my job, I suppose.
Yep, that's all it is.
Yeah, so between the Mac and Cage, there was a decent short feud here. And I thought it was appropriate. I'm pretty sure they faced each other again at the second Ultima Lucha, I think, right? They were trying to... capture that lightning in a bottle, but I think it had the reverse ending that time.
Yeah, I believe so. For the unique opportunity or whatever.
The unique opportunity tournament, and the two of them faced each other again, and I just think it went the other way. It was a reversal of fortune. But no, I like it, and Dario made a couple of key announcements there. One, a match that I think a lot of people ended up enjoying between Mac and Cage. Also, if you had just missed that match because it barely lasted any time, I mean, it was kind of good. And then also the fact that this big, season finale that was coming up, a pay-per-view and everything except for actually having to pay for it, he was stretching it to 2 weeks, which I think is awesome.
2 weeks. the reference that I wrote down is something that we had discussed, I believe it was from this season, something that we thought that with everything fantastical going on in Lucha Underground, that at least I was sort of surprised and perturbed by seeing Dario Cueto doing drugs. And the reference that I wrote down is Matt Stryker says, oh, you never know what Dario Cueto's got up his sleeve or up his nose. And I was like, huh, I did not catch that upon, when I first watched it. And it just harkened back to that sort of the surprising factor that Dario might have a little bit of a drug problem. But so there it was, a reference all the way back in season one to it.
You gotta love Lucha for its consistency and its story building and its lore. You know what, though? Dario does not have a drug problem, just a little bump here and there to keep himself up.
You know, it's hard making all those matches.
He's dealing with Aztec gods, man. All right, he needs every edge he can get.
I guess that's fair. That's fair. Nice. But Dario
gotta
then
hide my senses.
Dario then also promised that he would give us the meaning of the medallions right now. And this is my why I love Lucha moment of the night here in this episode. The meaning of the medallions, the introduction of the Gift of the Gods championship. This was a tremendous segment with Lucha Underground introducing what I think is one of the coolest title belt in professional wrestling. I want a replica of the Gift of the Gods so bad. Like, can you imagine just with the removable medallions and everything like that, how cool that would be? Ugh. It would be so awesome. It would be so freaking awesome to have that hanging up in my office or in my home. It would be tremendous. So we got the introduction of the Gift of the Gods, and I really like, and this is what stood out to me when I watched it live. It's what stood out to me when I watched it again. But Dario Cueto's face and his delivery is like, but this title is not, you cannot just, cash it in whenever you want. Just totally crapping on the Money in the Bank from WWE. It was just awesome. What did you think about this segment?
That's one of my favorite parts, because I love the shitting on the Money in the Bank, which I actually do appreciate. But he also does have a point.
He's a promoter.
As far as just dropping in like that. I think that's really funny because it also is just a blatant shot against the WWE, which you don't see often.
Catch it in.
The way he said it was great, and then the audience's reaction, because it's so blatant what he's talking about.
Yeah.
What I liked about this, and once again, it just comes down to that showmanship. I like that the medallions get like sucked into the belt, and they even pointed that out. Also, did you see which medallion Sexy Star had?
No, I did not. Was it the spider one?
She had the moth one.
Ooh, wow. That is very interesting.
Yeah, it's. I mean, obviously, that's nothing I had ever noticed before when I first watched that episode, but it stood out to me this time when I saw her holding it.
I meant to go back and look at all the different ones.
And who was holding which medallion and stuff,
Yeah, so I just want to know what ones are going in there.
I would have loved if during that segment they had also named each of the tribes. That's the only thing that I would have liked, because I still don't think we have an official roster.
I don't think we do.
Yeah, but I mean, from a storytelling perspective, maybe that's good because it still gives them the chance to introduce something. But they've made the medallion, so it has to look like something in case somebody were to catch a glimpse of it.
From a lore perspective, I need to know. It's killing me.
I don't know. Well, what if it's like Warhammer 40K? You got the two lost legions. You got the lost tribe. Well, it's whatever animal you want it to be, James.
You could always add those later on too. That like the missing eighth tribe or ninth tribe, whatever you want to do, and something terrible happening to them. But yeah, I really appreciate.
No one talks about it anymore.
I appreciated this segment a lot, and that you know. Then you brought out all the medallion holders with Jack Evans, Aerostar, King Cuerno, Bengala, who we have not seen in a long time, Sexy Star, Big Rick, and then we got Phoenix making his return after the death match. I appreciate the fact that he had white tights on to sort of, I feel like, sell his rebirth and everything like that. Don't know why he was wearing the shirt. Don't really care. Vampiro said maybe it's because he had some scarring or something like that from the death match. But once Vampiro called attention to it, then I could not think about it. And I'm trying not to think about it now, but I'm thinking about it more. I don't know why he was wearing the shirt. Doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I don't really get it. You know, it's not
it's like
the
Ultimate Warrior wearing a baseball cap. What are you doing, bro?
It's not like he had gotten suddenly out of shape or something like that, like some wrestlers do. I don't understand. But some things, I guess, you just weren't meant to know the answer to. But thanks for calling attention to it on commentary, Vampiro, because now I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Well, Vampiro is thinking in his head, he's like, everybody's going to be asking about the truth. I better explain it. Got to explain it away. That's my job.
Oh, man. No, you did a bad job, Vampiro.
Vampiro, like, hey, man, he's got white pants.
You know what I was thinking about? Like, my mind is like, oh, well, maybe he didn't have a top to match. And then, like, the end of The Usual Suspects, I'm like, he doesn't wear a top. Why is he wearing that shirt? What the fuck? I don't know. Let's move on. Let's try and get past it. So Dario then announced that since Phoenix had waited so long, he in fact lost control of that medallion and had to earn the final one in a battle.
Bullshit.
In a battle royal with the final two competitors being pinfall or submission only. Some people we saw in the Battle Royal, let's just go down by how they were eliminated. Ricky Mandel, he was out first. And what I have written down here.
By Famous B eliminated him.
Dude, I know. Famous B, and correct me if I'm wrong.
This was his best match, man.
Famous B had already had his arm broken by Pentagon at this point, correct?
Absolutely. I think Pentagon was done breaking arms
yes,
at this point.
Because, we're leading up to Ultima Lucha. So this is probably Famous B's first appearance since that. And, he acquitted himself actually pretty well in this match. Probably, like you said, his best showing. So Mandel was out first, and then I just have written down LOL Arjenis, man. That guy that guy can't catch a break, and I think he looks so cool. I really like Arjenis. I'm a man of faith,
I
appreciate an angel. You don't understand what?
I don't understand Arjenis' appeal to you. I really don't. I understand that you're a man of faith. I understand that you like the angel motif. He sucks, man.
Why does he suck? He sucks because they choose to book him to suck.
His performance sucks constantly.
He sucks because they choose to book him to suck, but I don't get it. If they booked him to win, like, he looks awesome. No? You don't think he looks cool?
I think he looks very generic, which is why he's booked the way that he is.
Arjenis, man. Guy's straight from heaven.
Guy of the future.
Yeah.
Problem is, he always is.
And then it was exit kill shot. which was surprisingly early for him, I felt like. And then
this is before Killshot really came into his own, though.
That is true, but he did come in pretty hot in the Trios Tag Tournament. Vinny Massaro was then eliminated. I believe Superfly and Masquerita went out at the same time.
Yes.
And then Famous B was trying to hold on, and he was eliminated. Didn't.
That's because. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, this was also Famous B's match where he was emulating all these great superstars. He's doing a pedigree. He started pulling a Hogan. Here I thought he was channeling Shawn Michaels as far as he was holding onto the rope.
Couldn't quite pull it off. Yeah, couldn't quite do that one. Sorry.
Well, there's only one HBK.
That is very true. But he was in the final four then, I guess, of this Battle Royal.
Not bad.
Not too bad a showing.
Especially when you look at who the other three were, because there were stories building around the other three. He really was the red shirt in this case.
He was, and so he made it to the final four, but then he was out. Then Daivari exited shortly thereafter, and then it was a Phoenix versus a Moth for the final Aztec medallion. I mean, Phoenix did great in this. Even though he's wearing that shirt for some reason, he didn't miss a step in the ring, so I don't understand.
Oh, wait, maybe he had scars or something.
That's what Vampiro said, you SOB.
I thought I heard that somewhere.
It would I don't know. Maybe there was a plan to, like, really sell the scarring or something like that, and they just didn't – I don't know. Anyway.
I don't even know if it's so much the scarring. Maybe they were trying to sell the point of that he was still recovering and was injured. You know what I mean? But, like, what he should have done was basically what Puma had done with the bandaged ribs.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked that, too. They should have done something like that. Yeah, I agree. But the shirt, I don't know.
Or Phoenix was really cold that night and the performer refused to take off his shirt. I don't know.
Anyway, Phoenix won.
There are no bad theories.
No, there are bad theories. Phoenix prevailed, and again, I loved it walking up to the Gift of the Gods title belt, and again, it being sucked in there, and then it was set. You know, it is now up to the gods. And it's just so great. And then that wasn't all for the episode. We were supposed to get Prince Puma speaking for the first time. As he entered the ring, he was wearing his Player 2 mask, which Vampiro seemed to dig that, which I appreciated.
Vampiro's such a little goth kid.
He is. I then have written down, my God, Katrina. And then, Mil Muertes in a suit, which... Jeff,
looking sharp. He was looking good.
Dude, he does look sharp in that suit, too, man. He looks like a damn James Bond villain in this. He looks like Bane. He's freaking sick.
He looks like Bane is what he looked like.
Yeah.
He looks like Bane meeting Rupert Thornton for the first time.
Yeah.
There is nothing cooler than a luchador in a suit. There never will be.
It's tremendous. I appreciate it so much.
That's for my wedding in the future. All the men are wearing
dude, I'm down, man. You know I'm down.
I know you're down.
I was already thinking about it at my wedding being like, you know, and I showed Cerro Miedo when I proposed. But anyway, Mill was looking sick. And then we got, you know, the Disciples of Death hit the ring.
the evil Arhennuses, basically.
Hey, fuck you. Disciples of Death hit the ring.
They ambushed Puma. And then all got their ass. They're the Putty Patrol.
No, they are, but they served their role well, and this was to make Prince Puma look strong. And then he taunted Mil Muertes to hit the ring, and Puma got the better of Mil Muertes in this exchange too. And I actually forgot that happened. I was watching it. And I was like, I don't remember how this one ends. Did Mil stand strong heading into Ultima Lucha, or did Puma? And it was Puma who hit the 630 on a suited up Mil. Much to the chagrin of Katrina, but I did like how they sort of sold it because it was like Katrina did not look overly concerned, sort of like all part of the plan, but Mil just laid there like dead after the 6:30. Puma stood tall on this night, but of course he would lose his championship to Mil Muertes at Ultima Lucha 1. And I thought it was a great segment. The Puma-Mil Muertes feud has been so great. It was cool to get to relive some of the genesis of it here as well. What did you think of the closing segment?
I love the closing segment. We've talked about this before when we were discussing the Phoenix Mil Muertes feud. Puma versus Mil Muertes has always been different. Puma always does hold his own. Their powers do sync up where the two of them are kind of like equals. And then depending on the day, one of them kind of gets over on the other. And then, of course, I always love Puma doing the superhero landing onto the Aztec symbol in the center of the ring. I just think it looks badass. Puma is just such a showman.
Yeah, he is.
And I mean, there's nobody I enjoy watching more at Lucha Underground than him.
It was, I mean, I love Prince Puma as well. I love Mil Muertes and just classic, some classic season one episodes that we got to enjoy this week. Next week, of course, they're going to be finishing off season one with their greatest hits. It is going to be both episodes of Ultima Lucha 1 that we are going to be watching and reliving with all you believers out there. But with that is going to do it for us this week here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.